Mini episode 197 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 197. We've got two FDH Lounge original dignitaries today. First of all, me, Rick Morris, and we've got also on the phone lines with us, Nate Noy. We're going to be reprising what we did for mini episode number 152, which was taking a look at the Breaking Bad Season 5 series. And today is our bookend to that. 152 was a preview of Season 5 right before it started. 197 today is a recap of what we saw, our analysis of it. We're going to be taking a look back at Season 5 today, as opposed to taking a look ahead to Season 6 or 5B, depending on how you define it. Some people are calling it two parts of the same season. For me, it's Season 5, Season 6. I mean, I know that they're short, you know, mini campaigns, if you will, but if they're separated by 9 months or so, then to me, they're separate and distinct seasons, but I guess it's all a matter of individual definition. So we're going to be saving a look ahead for the next time that we reconvene, which is going to be relatively soon. But there's so much material to take a look at here. We've got to break it up into two parts. That's the only feasible way to be able to do it. And as I say, the last time around on this, did it with our good friend Nate Noy. I'm happy to say it was well-received, as I knew it would be. And we're going to do it again here today, taking a look back and at what we expected, what we saw, what amazed us, which covers an awful lot of ground, and everything in between. So having said that, we've got him here with us, our good friend, original FDH Lounge dignitary, Nate Noy. Nate, how you doing today, my friend?
Doing great, Rick. I wish 9 months from now it happened already, but we're going to have to wait just a little bit longer to see how this thing plays out. But definitely think that we could spend two full days talking about this show, or even more time than that, and could even go 30 minutes an episode without a problem. We definitely want to just focus on what we just saw over the last few months, and then, like you said, we'll talk about the future in another episode. So
we'll be doing that relatively soon, yeah. And you know, you and I could conveniently put this under the rubric of show prep, but yeah, how many hours have you and I spent breaking down what we've seen recreationally? And yeah, you know, I guess you could say for the course of something like this here today, but something that we'd be doing without these microphones anyways, for as much as you and I love the show and really got into it. And right off the bat, you know, we were told to expect the unexpected when they were dropping some of the hints last summer, that episode 1, season 5, was going to have a few twists to it, that it was going to be a little bit more lighthearted in some ways than the end of season 4, which was, of course, the climax of the grim showdown between Gus and Walt. And indeed, you did have the Magnet Caper, one of my favorite recurring actors on the show. The large cast of people that pop in and out is just so great. The junkyard owner, who I think also played the fake Kramer back on Seinfeld back in the day. That guy's awesome. So you had that. You had Ted not being dead. You had a couple of twists right off the bat there, Nate. And we were kind of wondering how they were going to be tying up the loose ends from season 4. Walt was smart enough to throw out the poison plant from the backyard, but those guys ended up back in touch with Mike. Episode 1 really kind of just started us off in great fashion and with a cold open that really confounded us.
Yeah, I agree completely. And again, you know, we definitely could spend a half an hour talking about just episode 1. And one of the things I love about this show is it always gives you some kind of clue, you know. And I think episode 1 had clues for the future. And almost every episode, they stick a clue or two in there for those people that like to watch this show not once, not twice, three or four times. And I could watch the same episode 5 times. I mean, it's such a good show. It's the only show I think I've ever watched where you could just keep watching it, because there's always little things that pop up that you didn't notice before. I mean, I find myself now when I'm watching this show, I'm looking around the room. I want to see what's in the picture. I want to see what's on the television, because they drop hints everywhere. It's amazing. And the two things about the first episode, one, and I didn't even catch this until you told me, was, you know, the whole prelude to what's going to come in the next set of the series with him buying the gun and the ammunition is that he'd actually bought the gun from the same guy he bought the gun from in episode four, so kind of tied that together. That's something I didn't recognize that you did catch. So,
well, there was that, and then I got to tell you, just in reviewing the notes that I had here right before we came on the air, I had posted on our blog at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com 20 questions before this season, and I was wondering how they were going to be addressed. And just to show you what a foregone conclusion I thought it was, how is Ted's death going to affect the series? Well, we haven't gotten there yet. Something tells me that we still will. But one of the questions that I had was around the subject of the grid eraser that Saul has. That guy, he's been invoked twice now. He can get you off the grid, new identity, new whatever. My sense is that's how Walt is going to materialize with the new driver's license, new identity, everything. And again, everybody's assuming, and I want to put this on the record here today because I'm not seeing this point made. Everybody's assuming that's his legitimate 52nd birthday, and we have 9 months more to go in this series. I don't know that we can say that for sure because, again, is Walt going to put down his actual birthday on a fake driver's license? He might.
Exactly.
But
he might.
If that's not his true identity, then there's no reason that it has to be 9 months out from here. You would think he would vary it a little bit.
I agree with that, but you know, I guess that's one of the mysteries of the next round. There are three other big notes I had from this episode. One was, and two of them are relationship notes. The relationship between the manipulation continued between Walt and Jesse, of course, when with the whole rice and cigarette and how, you know, just the deviousness of him having that and hiding it in the house after spending, you know, 4 hours or whatever helping him look for it, knowing it's in his pocket the whole time and finally dropping it to where he can find it. I mean, that manipulation's unbelievable. And then the power he has over Saul when he goes up in his face and says, "We're done when I say we're done." I mean, those two, you know, that kind of brought out the deviousness of Walt at that point, how he is Heisenberg right now, and you could see just from those two interactions, and actually a third one, I guess, at the end when that you know, very uncomfortable scene in the bedroom when he puts his hand on Skylar's shoulder and she shrieks. I mean, so I think we've seen, at this point, we've got to see a little taste of Heisenberg, I think, and then there, so.
Well, you're right about that, and what's very interesting, the scene with Jesse, since you mentioned it, it's left off camera, but Jesse's decision that he's going to go back to cooking after everything that happened at the end of season four, and I'm not going to criticize Vince Gilligan and the crew for leaving it off camera, and I guess we're supposed to believe that it's part of Walt's manipulation of Jesse in that moment of vulnerability where Jesse thinks that he almost threatened to kill him on a mistake. Jesse deciding to go back to cooking, I didn't think that was necessarily a given at the end of season four. And I guess, like I said, it's probably just supposed to be part of the whole manipulation in that scene, a result of it, of where Jesse's like, okay, yeah, guess we're going to cook again.
Right. And actually, I think maybe I got my episodes confused. I think that might have been the second episode when they did the searching of the cigarette. But
I think so, yeah.
Close enough. It was. That's the thing. When you watch all eight, I'm not sitting here trying to dissect single individual. We're trying to dissect the season as a whole. So some things kind of get meshed together. But the key thing that definitely was in that episode was, you know, and this is the obvious one, and you knew when you watched it, is when they did the magnet and the bank numbers got uncovered behind the picture. But that was the but-for cause of so many things to come in this season. You know, but if you didn't catch that, most people probably caught it, but if you didn't catch it, that was a huge moment in the show and really kind of drove a lot of what happened the rest of the year just because they found those numbers because of the magnet. So
there are moments through the course of this show, and I think that the closest parallel to that one was the first time that Heisenberg let somebody at least relatively or mostly innocent die, and that being Junkie Jane towards the end of season two. And then the effect that had with her grief-stricken father going in catatonic at his job as an air traffic controller, Walt's actions indirectly leading to that massive plane crash, that massive loss of life. This is one of the things I think that the show tries to drive home, is that Walt's original decision to break bad, it has such wide-ranging ramifications. I mean, we never even see the faces of the junkies out there and the people that are drawn to this nearly pure crystal meth that's out there, and the effect that that must have on the drug epidemic. One would think, and then maybe it'll be alluded to in the final season or half season, however you define it, that a lot more people have probably gotten addicted in the area because of it. That's just something that's been left off camera. But time after time after time, ramifications of the original decision and ramifications of other things here. What you just mentioned, like I said, it reminded me of the whole plane crash thing here. But had it not been for the thing with the magnets, it actually accomplished nothing positive for them, because the computer was encrypted anyways. They wouldn't have been able to get into it. But again, you have all these henchmen that ended up dying, and their families that had been receiving the money and counting on the money. I mean, again, these people are criminals, and presumably the families are in on it as well. These are pretty grim folks, but it does just show you, does it not, that the continuing chain of everybody that's affected by Walt, the web of the people that are affected by Walt, it seems almost endless.
And that's the beauty. And one of the beauties of this show is, you know, decision consequence, action consequence, and they actually, you see some of those consequences and how they play out and the ripple effect so many layers away from the original choice. Yeah, I agree completely, and that's just trying to keep track of all that is really not, it's not an easy task as a viewer of this show. Is, oh, wow, if, you know, light bulb goes off. Gee, if Walt hadn't done that 15 episodes ago, this wouldn't be happening right now. So, you know, that's, you can watch it without that light bulb going off, but it's one of those things in TV where you just feel, oh, wow. You know, you love how those the pieces tie together. And when you figure out that this just happened because of something that happened before, you know, that's an enjoyable moment, I think, for most viewers.
Well, along those same lines, Nate, and this isn't something that happened this year, it's something previous, but if you wanted to look at it this way, that's the beauty of how you unravel this show and you just look at all the layers of it. The ultimate showdown between Walt and Gus was pretty much preordained before they even got into business together. If you look at it, it was Combo getting gunned down by what turned out to be Andrea's younger brother at the time there. Eventually, Jesse uncovers it. He goes after the people that turn out to be Gus's people. They're already in business with Gus by that time. Walt has to intervene dramatically to try to save Jesse's life. That ends up taking out Gale, and that plants the seeds at that point that at some point Gus is going to get Walt if Walt doesn't get Gus first. So that entire thing, the seeds of it happened before I think Walt and Jesse ever even met Gus.
I agree. I think, you know, the writers certainly look ahead. And I think you mentioned they might not always have a plan of how it's going to work out, but they never forget what they've already written. And so when they set things up, maybe they're not always knowing what they're setting up, but at least they tie it back to something that happened before, which makes it to the viewer seem like it was something that was, like you just said, preordained. And we knew that feeling in season four. There had to be a showdown, and we knew the season wasn't going to end, so we knew, you know, Walt wasn't going to take it. But, you know, it was I love how they do that with the show. And, there's still more little things from this season that we just watched that already played themselves out, and some that we still will get to see play themselves out. You know, I think episode two, the introduction of Lydia, was obviously the biggest moment of that episode. And what, I mean, what's your take on the Lydia character? You and I really haven't even got to discuss that much.
Well, and by the way, as far as it goes with Lydia, if you remember back, I don't know if it was season three or season four, but when they were bringing the Los Pollos Hermanos to the front, and they ran, I think it was a cold open. It was a commercial for them. And it alluded to, at the very end of it in fine print, something like a subsidiary of the Madrigal Corporation or something like that. So the seeds have been planted with Madrigal way back then, as well as last year, Hank starting to piece things together. You wondered how this was going to unfold with the Madrigal folks here, because, again, we had the sense that everything was running through Gus, right? Because we never saw anything to the contrary last year. It turns out that the henchmen were basically assembled by Mike, which makes sense, but they hadn't alluded to it at the time, so those were people. And oh, by the way, for as much as Mike almost threw it back in Walt's face that Walt killed Gus, By the way, Walt also took out a couple of Mike's henchmen also. Interesting that Mike didn't ever think to mention that. But we wondered how this was going to come about. I was a little bit kind of dubious at the outset. I mean, I trust the writers, as you do. But it was like, okay, how are these guys going to meet these, you know, Madrigal European folks? Well, it turns out that Mike and Lydia had basically been in Gus's inner circle together. And that times in season four, when Gus kind of shut out Mike, was kind of like, I got this, don't worry about it with the cartel, whatever. Well, apparently Mike was a little more a part of the inner circle than we thought. Through that, he met Lydia. So that explains how that came to be. She's a very interesting character, obviously very greedy, obviously very amoral in that sense. She has, I mean, her one vulnerability, as a lot of the characters do, and maybe a somewhat redeeming one, how she cares for her young daughter. She's a single mom, but an interesting character, so greedy and yet so fearful for her life at various points in time, somebody so easily spooked, and somebody who, even while she's fearing for her life, can switch back into negotiation mode a minute later about how she's going to get paid once this thing wraps itself up. So
I love that. Very
interesting multidimensional character, don't you think?
I love that about the character, and it's not a normal person. I mean, usually somebody that greedy is very grandiose and thinks that the world can't touch them. But you're right. She's the complete opposite. She's paranoid. She thinks everybody's out to get her. But at the same time, she's one of the most greedy people willing to bend or break the laws any way she can to make it fit for her. So an interesting dynamic was added with her to the show. Be interesting to see. Again, we're not speculating about next year, but is Walt done? If he is, where's Lydia fit in? That kind of stuff. You know, and in the next episode, I think the key takeaway from that episode was near the end when they split up the money. And if we, again, kind of, you know, giving us foretelling of what's to come, Walt makes the comment about, you know, sometimes people overstep their bounds and you have to get rid of them. So at that point, we knew Mike's days were going to be numbered, I guess.
Yeah, they've been teasing that all season long, no question about it. And it was starting to plant seeds in Jesse's head. The only thing that I found here, I don't want to make this sound like I'm criticizing the writers, because I think, if anything, they played it more true to real life. Real life doesn't always wrap itself up in a neat bow. But the whole thing about Walt and Jesse coming to a head, well, we already saw them beat the crap out of each other towards the end of last year. Now, that was a thing wherein Jesse came out on the winning end of it. And again, Jesse was led to believe that, you know, after, subsequently, okay, well, you know, that was all a mistake. Gus was pitting us against one another. So the whole thing this year of Jesse kind of slowly getting the blinders off towards Walt, there's a little bit of, didn't we see this already? I don't want to criticize them for that. And it's, like I said, it's probably truer to real life, because things don't always progress in a straight line. Sometimes it's a little bit jagged, but it's enough to make you wonder, as Jesse's getting the blinders off, if Walt's going to be able to bamboozle him again. Even towards the end of the season, I think I was wondering that.
Yeah, that again, that's one of the there's so many things in this show that you look at and you're, well, wow, that's the key to the show. Wow, that's the heart of the show. Yep, that's the heart of the show. But one of those 8 to 10 things that you say is the heart of the show, or I think is the heart of the show, really is that dynamic between Jesse and Walt. And watching that unfold and watching how that's changed over time, and how, you know, at one point and at many points, Walt completely controls Jesse, manipulates him, and now over the course of this end of this last season, we've seen Jesse kind of break free and make up his own mind and stand his ground against Walt, which is something that I didn't even think we'd ever see come. So we're starting to see that happen, and you know, we wonder, is there any way, and again, we don't want to talk about next year, but is there any way that can flip? That Jesse maybe in the end can, I don't think he will have any control over Walt, but at least I think he's back on somewhat equal footing and not just the guy that gets manipulated at every turn. So,
oh, he is. I think you're absolutely right about that. And it's very interesting also that in terms of how Mike went about it, again, he was forceful in exerting himself on the money and how things were going to be done, but the flip side of Mike's whole sense of honor among thieves, and this is how we do it, this is the way that the life goes, is that in a sense that presented a real vulnerability towards Walt, because he was allowing things to go to a vote. That was how Walt met Lydia in the first place. Okay, well, they were going to vote about her fate rather than Mike just taking matters into his own hands and taking care of things there. And then subsequently, I think Mike showed a real vulnerability towards Wall, having beaten the crap out of him, having knowing that he could physically exert his will over Walt. In the end, Mike underestimated Walt. And you could kind of see it coming. You could kind of see that as much as Mike thought that Walt was an evil and malignant force, that didn't necessarily translate to danger for himself so long as he stayed wary of him. And then in the end, things didn't work out so well for Mike because of that underestimation.
I would say they didn't work out so well.
No. It was a peaceful death scene, you know, but I don't think that was much of a consolation.
Oh,
by a babbling brook.
That was good stuff, that episode. You know, maybe the one dud episode of the season was 51. I'm not sure a lot really happened in that one. You know, I guess maybe one of the takeaways was when near the end, when Walt had gotten the watch, he told Skyler that, you know, the person that gave me this watch wanted me dead too. So, and the, you know, that they played out that she wanted the cancer to come back and wanted him dead. So I think that, you know, in my mind, the key takeaway from that episode is that was Skyler's final breaking point. We finally got to see what Skyler thought of Walt. And now just think about the changes in that relationship for the course of this season, you know, from sympathetic wife to loving sympathetic wife to, you know, an affair to now wanting him dead.
Another character's
gone through a long changing process in a short time period with this show. So
exactly. You know, to some form of cooperation, however reluctantly, later in the season, once her wish about the kids being out of the house was granted. But it was a matter where it's really funny you mention that episode, because that's the one where I was in New York that week. I take care of some of the FDH business, and so I didn't get to see it. I taped it. It was waiting for me at home when I got back. I watched it early Friday morning, and it was kind of like, wow, I'm glad we're almost to Sunday now, because I watched the whole thing, and it was – I know what they were trying to do, and it was necessary. You have to have episodes like that just to kind of reset things, get you ready for what's going to be coming, you know, the final three episodes of the season. It was going to end with a bang in a number of different ways. But it doesn't mean that makes that individual episode so enthralling. Not every episode can be if you're trying to do a series like this. So I was like, okay, I can't wait for the good stuff on Sunday again. This must mean the next one's going to be really good. So I didn't fault them for it, but those are the ones that don't leave you as excited when you're done. But we were coming to ones at the very end there with the methylamine. I think the very next one was the train heist, was it not?
Yeah, they certainly bounced back, because that's the only episode you're right. Every once in a while in almost every show, there's got to be a down episode, and that was the one. It wasn't, you know, I talked to you after you got back from New York, and I didn't see it till late in the week either, and I'm like, boy, am I glad there's another one. But then as soon as I watched the next one, I'm like, I can't believe I got to wait another week for the next one. It was so good. It was so good. It was probably the second best episode of the year. I think the finale may have been the best, but that, you know, you want to talk about this one for a minute with the whole methylene scheme? I mean, it was a phenomenal episode.
Oh, it was. It truly was. Just where they went with that as far as how the methylamine was to be extracted and getting out of that train and planning it and everything that went along with it. And when we get through the eight episodes of the season, one of the things I want to get to is the notion of the bookends through the season here, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at that time. This was a bookend to the magnet caper in episode one of the season, and both times something went wrong. We talked about that as far as the first one, that the names came out of the picture frame and put them on the trail of Gus's henchmen. This time around, a young boy ends up eating it at the end here, something that was just really, really shocking. And I guess this is – I had given you the inadvertent spoiler. I don't even remember what I said, but merely that what I think I said that what you saw of the kid in that episode would come back at some point. You happened to hear the train whistle.
Yeah, you said the first episode doesn't really fit in, but pay attention. So, man, I was paying attention like you can't imagine. I mean, everything, looking at the dirt, looking at the kid. I'm like, what am I missing? I'm like, oh, man, they're not just going to, like, have something kill this kid right now. Or they were scared almost. And then I heard this train whistle. I'm like, train whistle? And then about 25 minutes into the episode, they start talking about a train. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
So.
See, I didn't even hear the train whistle at first. Yeah, but that was it's interesting. Yeah, that you can give somebody and that happened with me and with Kyle Ross with Mad Men this year. Sometimes you can give somebody a spoiler without even intending it. The other thing, though, is as far as bookends go for this one, and we might as well just get this particular pair of bookends out of the way since we're talking about this now, is the inclusion of, as I said, the extra members of this wonderful cast that they have. You had the junkyard owner who was part of the Magnet Caper, and I forget the guy's name, but he's played by comedian Bill Burr, and he's brought in whenever they need like a flim-flam man for any kind of a thing. And Bill Burr just plays the character perfectly. So he's got the truck that stopped on the train tracks, and, oh, hey, can you give me a hand with this thing here? And, what a treat that is whenever any of these things. I hate to think that we've reached the point where, because they're not really going ahead with the cooking, at least for now, we may not see any more scenes with that guy because he is just freaking gold.
No, hopefully they'll figure out something to work him into. Absolutely. Like you'd mentioned, he was on prior when they were trying to assess the value of the car wash, and he was scaring, pretending to be EPA or something for the old car wash.
He was that
scheming
guy. He was part
of
the
whole.
Oh yeah, and he was part of the whole thing too when you had Ted and that where they were trying to scare him into writing the check to the IRS. We saw at the end of the episode for the first time how Todd was really going to fit into this thing here. Previously, he had just been part of the crew that was the bug spraying crew, and of course that was how they were cooking the meth this year. Saul hooked them up with a crooked company that did bug spraying and elimination of pests, and so they were cooking in these houses around the time of the eradication of the bugs. And Todd had kind of ingratiated himself a little bit to them. He tipped Walt to the presence of a nanny cam. We saw at the end of the episode here just what the guy was capable of. Jesse would, in the next episode, refer to him as Ricky Hitler. One of the great things I saw on message boards, I think it was on AV Club, where the commenters can be really brutal, but where they started calling the guy because of what he looks like, they called him Meth Damon. So
that's fabulous.
We saw at the end just what that guy was capable of, and we'll get into more speculation the next time we get together. Just, we know we haven't seen the last of that guy.
Not at all. And it's funny because, again, you mentioned the Ricky Hitler scene at the beginning of the buyout episode. And the other thing out of that buyout episode is, when they were trying to decide what to do, Todd tells him he's connected and his uncle's connected. And Mike's like, yeah, he is. And, of course, we saw what that meant very soon thereafter. So... again, they kind of set us up to anticipate something, because when they said that, I'm like, who cares? That's what my thought was. Who cares that he's connected to somebody that controls prisons? What does that matter to this? Oh, it mattered. So.
Well, it really did. And it was Jesse thought, and I think correctly, that part of it was a threat in terms of saying I'm connected, that if anything happens to me, there may be people that come looking for you. I think he's right. I think that Todd meant that multidimensionally, in terms of what I can do to help out subsequently, and also, oh, by the way, it might not be such a good thing if I end up missing. But how quickly things turn on this show. I mean, in the span of one episode, at the beginning of that episode, you've got Mike threatening Todd, you better not do this ever again. And by the beginning of the next episode, not through anything that Todd initiated, but Todd is helping to dispose of Mike and all evidence of Mike.
That is just amazing.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, again, it shows you another change in a relationship almost. I mean, Todd was like, yes, sir, to Mike, and now he's helping to dispose of his body.
Yeah. Well, he knew that he could see that Walt, for a good long period of time, that Heisenberg, rather, was really the force behind this thing. Mike was providing a lot of the muscle in terms of gun work. And I guess organization and whatnot, but that the Heisenberg brain was really driving this thing. Todd saw that. Todd ingratiated himself with Walt, even refused, once he took Jesse's place on the cooks, refused to take his cut of the money the first time around. I know I haven't done a real good job yet. Pay me once I get better at it and everything. So Todd was really calculating as far as ingratiating himself to Heisenberg in this one. When we get to the season finale and we're looking at it here, it's interesting. You and I talked about this off air. The whole notion, as we talked about previously with this show, that this is a cinematic type of viewing experience. You are viewing over the course of six seasons what is basically the longest movie you've ever seen in your life. You have to view it that way as opposed to a TV show, and where you're looking for the things, you're looking for the clues, as you said. Episode 8, Season 5, is the closest that we've ever seen to a standalone movie for this thing here, because you had about 10 weeks' worth of stuff in the span of a show that runs 15 months thus far. You had so many things packed into that 1 hour that it almost was a movie unto itself. The pacing of it was a little bit jarring in that way. I like what they did. I thought it was a great episode, but you had to watch it in a different way than you did anything that came before it.
I agree with that completely, and you mentioned yourself that, you know, how long were they sitting on that montage of that music, right?
Yeah, Crystal Blue Persuasion. I saw that speculated on some message boards that really was the perfect song to use, and that's why there's a lot of speculation that was Walt's last cook, that they were saving it for the climactic one.
Well, yeah, that last episode, I mean, again, that's another episode we could spend 30 minutes talking about. I think they've done a good job of setting us up, but they've given us a lot of questions that can go in multiple directions out of that episode. So
They have, and it's interesting, too, and again, I'm not going to go so far as to make a criticism in terms of pacing, because it's not quite that in my mind, but it's just something I want to point out as being slightly jarring. It was, I think, episode 6. Walt says to Jesse, I'm in the Empire business. Ah! And then in episode 8, he's ready to walk away from it. Now, in the time in between, Walt amassed a good, one of the biggest chunks of money I think we've ever seen illustrated on TV. Something that's bigger than a king-size mattress and stacked way up off the floor all the way around. An inhuman amount of money that had been amassed in that period of time. But it goes to show you, in the course of less than 3 episodes, that Walt went from, I want to build an empire, to, oh, okay, all right, time to take my gold watch. I guess I built my empire.
Exactly, and I think, they had to do the fast-forward thing, because how else could we get the concept of how much, you and I talked about this. In that episode, they showed Walt as like a working stiff. Like he'd come home from work and sit on a couch and go, ugh, and then back at it, and then ugh, and then back at it. I mean, we never really got to see that dynamic before of him being a working stiff doing this. So
That's true. That's absolutely true. And as you look at this, and again, we talked about this, that how much they used bookends through the course of the season. We talked a little bit about the bookending capers early in the season, late in the season. You had the two different times where Walt was crying in Hank's office. The first time he was planting the bug, the second time he was picking it up from there. And the second time he was actually a little bit less effective and actually had to kind of prompt Hank to go get him some coffee to make him feel better. You had in the last scene of the season here, where Hank was finding the poetry book the Walt Whitman book that had been inscribed to Walt by Gail. Earlier in the season, Hank took over in the office, became the top cop in the Albuquerque DEA office, because his predecessor was drummed out because of Gus Fring being right underneath his nose. And you've got a situation where he was now looking at the same kind of thing possibly happening, and that'll be a big part of the speculation for us as we look ahead to season 6. But you had so many different devices, and of course, maybe the most entertaining of which, the dinners that were there, the very uncomfortable dinners. Walt and Jesse, the first time it was at Jesse's place with Andrea and Brock over there, where Walt was having to sit there at dinner with the kid that he poisoned. And the second time around, which was the funnier one, I thought, because it didn't have the tension of the poisoned kid being there, Walt, Jesse, and Skyler with her ginormous wine glass and the way that she ended up going off on Walt in front of Jesse, which Walt seemed to anticipate and play into perfectly, it seemed.
I agree. And you know, back to my point of every little thing matters. Keep your eye on the screen. You mentioned this to me. I hadn't even remembered it. But I kind of remembered it was earlier in the season. I think it was episode 2 or 3 when Walt came back home for good and was unpacking, and he took that book out and he caressed it. And I'm thinking, why is he caressing that book? What does that matter? You so many times when you're watching that episode before you know what's going to happen, you may catch what that scene is, what that clue is, but you don't know why. And you ask yourself, what does that matter? But it did. And I got to tell you, I watched that last episode at least 10 times. I rewound it. I watched it again. I watched it again. I watched it again. And you know, they had panned the copy of that book a couple times during that episode. So you kind of had a feeling coming up. But I got to tell you, I got cold chills. And that happens very rarely when I watch a show. But the end of that episode when they did the flashback for Hank and Walt goes, "You got me." I was like, "Woo!"
Well,
and then it's
that,
like,
that,
no, 9 more months. No, I can't.
I know.
Wait.
I know.
How can you do this to me?
but that's how they leave you at the end of everyone. Last year, you wanted to see what was going to happen after Walt wasted Gus with the bomb. You wanted to see previously at the end of the previous season. There was such confusion because of the camera angle changing. Did Jesse actually shoot Gale? And then Vince Gilligan had to go on the internet and say, yes, he did. We didn't mean to cause confusion on that. We were just changing the camera angle. So every year they leave you with something where you're just dying for the start of the next season. As you said, they did it again because we have finally gotten to that point of Hank figuring this thing out. But you've got just so many things happening here. You know, in that scene, it was a different kind of ending to the season than we'd had in previous years, because it wasn't ending in violence or anything like that. Although I was thinking to myself, knowing that the end was near, you could see it was just about the top of the hour, and I saw a lot of commenters on message boards saying this also. Did you have any kind of a feeling of foreboding with that last pool scene here? Because Walt had just casually announced to Skyler that he was walking away, and you're thinking, is Declan going to let him do this? Is whatever? Any thought of snipers having a bead on anybody at the pool or anything like that? I wasn't the only one that had that thought, apparently.
No, I was sitting there. I knew we had like 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. I'm like, something's got to happen. Something's got to happen. And then they went to like put the sunburn cream on the kid. I'm like, uh-oh. Are they going to do something to the kid? Do they poison the sunburn cream? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? That's exactly how I watched the end of that episode the first time. I was like, there's no way this is how it ends. Something's happening. And then Hank went to the bathroom, and we got to see what it was. But I didn't see it coming. I mean, how could you? And you know, I don't know how they're going to finish this series off, because, man, talk about the expectations for the final scene of the final episode. But you certainly had that feeling of, what is it going to be? And, I mean, what else can you watch on TV where you're asking yourself that as you watch a show? What else is it going to be? There isn't another show out there. And you're right. The last episode was cinematic, movie quality. You know, they did jam a lot into it. But, boy, I mean, anybody that – and I know anybody listening to this likely has watched the series. If they haven't, do themselves one of their biggest favors ever and go get the set and start watching this thing before the next season, because – you can't match it. It's I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's a loss for words for how good this show really is.
You got to go do that. One of our original fellow original dignitaries, Chris Galloway, I saw on Facebook here, just started on season one of this thing. So I look forward to him working his way through. And then once he's gone through all five seasons, which I trust is going to be way before next year, I'll actually be interested in getting his feedback on this, and maybe he'll want to join us. I told you that even though we're going to do our season six preview now in the near future, I still would like to do something not long before next season starts. So maybe he can join us as somebody who got through the whole thing basically after season five had already aired. But you talk about everything meaning something in this thing. And Vince Gilligan has gone out of his way to underline that. Again, he doesn't give spoilers, but he basically says, trust your intuition. If you see something and you think it's going to be significant, that means that it probably is. We didn't find out in the last episode here what the diagnosis was when Walt went back to the doctor, but we do know that that kind of lung cancer that he's got is generally fatal, almost always recurs, I believe. So the notion that it would come back, I think he's kind of been living under this shadow for some time, even once he went into remission. That sense there at the end as he's giving the contemplative look towards the mirror in the bathroom, again, they're not going to tell us outright the cancer's come back. But when Vince Gilligan says, trust your gut on these things, we know the cancer has come back. That will play into it, and we can we'll talk about this more in the next one. That might be why he had the full head of hair in the flash forward to season six, is if he's no longer in chemo. So that's just one more thing that proves it. Everything, there are Easter eggs all over the place, Nate. Everything means something.
And I'll give you one final observation that most people probably caught, but maybe not, is that flash forward to season six and the very first scene of season five, when he's in the bathroom getting ready to make that exchange, he has a bottle of pills and he swallows some pills. We had never seen him take any pills in this series. So
really? Why
is he taking pills if he doesn't already have the cancer back? Yep. So
I didn't realize that we'd never seen him take pills. Wow.
You remember seeing pills?
I'm just crediting you. That's a great observation because I hadn't thought of that. And yet, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of any specific times. I think that the treatment that he was undergoing was fairly standard. It was expensive. And by the way, and this is probably a good thing to bring it around on as well, you talk about callbacks, you talk about everything tying together. We were waiting, at least I was waiting, coming into this season, gray matter. You knew they were going to come back into it at first. It was Walt's hubris. It was his pride of, first of all, walking away from them and feeling screwed by what happened there, but then not wanting to take their help for paying for the chemo in season one. And as he laid it out to Jesse there, that was a truly amazing thing because, again, you had the callback to gray matter, but it was also this fascinating duality of Heisenberg. He was so arrogant that he went and got the sports car this year. He got the, you know, he was wearing the fancy watch from Jesse. He was almost kind of flaunting it a little bit, and yet he could still reduce himself when he needed to trying to get Jesse to feel sorry for him to manipulate him and trying to get Hank to feel sorry for him to manipulate him. That kind of back and forth between Heisenberg's control and losing control because of the overweening ego was every bit as fascinating to me as the gray matter callback.
I agree, Rick, and I know we're out of time today, but you know, I can't wait to. I've got a list of maybe 15 things. You had a list of 20 from last time. It's going to be hard to squeeze in our look ahead for next year into a 30-minute time period. But I look forward to the next time we get to talk about this show with the focus on what's coming up.
So. We're going to do that. Yes, that's going to be in the very near future that we're going to do that, and we're going to work out some kind of format that wouldn't be entirely duplicative of that. To reconvene right before season 6 or 5B, however you define it, starts airing next summer. Are you on the same page with me, Nate, that it's season 6?
It is absolutely season 6. And I guarantee you that when they sell season 5 box set of DVDs right before season 6 starts.
<That's>
no
true.
Way they're not going to take advantage of selling those DVDs. So to me, it's season
absolutely.
6.
Absolutely. All
you're
the way Entourage
me money,
did it. Well, under similar circumstances, Entourage actually had the nards to sell a season 3 part 1 and a season 3 part 2. So it's very possible they may brand it the same way with Breaking Bad. Who knows, Nate?
Well, they could brand it that way, but if I got to pay money twice, two different times to get the whole season, then it's not one season. I'm sorry.
I would agree with that. And again, much like the last time that we convened, something really, really, really great for the listeners. Nate, thank you so much for being a part of this here today. Look forward to looking ahead to season 6 with you sometime soon.
Fabulous stuff, Rick. Same here. I can't wait to talk about this again. Thanks again.
This will be outstanding when we get to do it. Thanks very much, everybody, for joining us. FDH Lounge, mini episode number 197.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.